Hi, and welcome to Solo Segment Search Chat. I'm Tim Peter. In this episode of Solo Segment Search Chat, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zaker and I take a look at the new Solo Segment website engagement report with a focus on how you can use personalization and content recommendations to improve engagement for your website visitors. We dive into the stats that show how B2B buyers use your website to learn more about your products and services, and how you can use content personalization to improve the experience that they have. All that and more on the latest Solo Segment Search Chat, coming at you right about now. Steve, how are you?
I'm doing really well, Tim. How's it going with your world?
It is a little slice of heaven, as always.
The light at the end of the tunnel on COVID means we'll be out of these jails we've been in soon.
I am telling you. You know, I think our last episode, the final episode of season one, this is season two of Search Chat for those of you joining us, but I think our last episode of season one was right before the world shut down. And obviously that played a role in why season one also.
It was a good ending point as we rebirthed.
I like it. Well, welcome to season two. And, you know, we're back. I'm glad to be chatting with you once again. I think we've got a lot of cool stuff to talk about over the next, you know, handful of weeks and months and the like.
Yeah.
And, you know, Steve, you and I were talking before the show about this new research report Solo Segment has put together about website engagement in a changed world, and we'll give people the URL for that later. It will be in the show notes, of course. But, you know, there were some really fascinating findings in the report that I think are going to be really relevant to the folks listening. So, you know, what when you look at the report, like, what jumped out at you as, wow, that's crazy, and people need to know about this?
Well, I think when you look at the context of this report, right, you know, we've been through this year of COVID. You know, we certainly have seen in our business as providers of, you know, digital marketing technologies, right, we have seen an acceleration of companies' appetite for that digital transformation. I mean, there are, you know, for better or for worse, there were a lot of laggards out there that, you know, weren't making the shift, were relying upon kind of human resources, if you will, to drive their businesses. And COVID kind of forced them to think about how people work in different ways, of course, but also how does digital factor more into their day-to-day? So I think one of the new things we discovered was shift to digital is accelerating. But also what we found out was how much some of the fundamental truths have not changed, right? That, you know, people expect, and I think the figure was 80%, right? People in their B2B experiences, in their professional lives, expect the same kind of customized experiences that they want in their personal lives. And so that's actually a fundamental truth that why the number might have increased really hasn't changed all that much.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you think about it, you know, one of the big myths of B2C versus B2B, and it's not that there's no truth to that, it's to what I'm about to say, rather. But it's this idea that, you know, people think when you're selling to a business that it's completely different from anything else. And in fact, you're still selling to a human being, right? I mean, obviously that human being is part of a buying process. Obviously there are more human beings involved that they have to jump through various, you know, hoops to make that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to engage that person. You know, I've done B2B selling for many years and in many different contexts. And one of the numbers that did surprise me was, you know, like most B2B purchase decisions require 6 to 10 people. So, you know, I knew it was a lot. I didn't know it was 6 to 10, but, you know, that's what the research shows, that there's a lot of, you know, in addition to the person who's the decision maker, right, there are a lot of influencers, and certainly you're dealing with procurement and finance and all these other organizations. But, you know, what's interesting about that is as we think about personalized experiences, you know, in the consumer context, it's, well, what does Tim want? And what's Tim's relationship with, and what's his context, and what's his desire, right? And now you're actually having to address many different contexts, many different goals. And, you know, I just think about like two basic ones, right? You know, maybe the business person, right? The person who has decision-making authority, you know, they want increased engagement on the website. They want more conversions. They want more revenue. And while the person in procurement mm-hmm. wants those things too, they also want, you know, a great price and lots of good value, et cetera. And so as you're thinking about website engagement, it's not only that you really have to step up your personalization game to meet those expectations, but you also now have to deal with, you know, what we in marketing call many different personas. And as if mm-hmm. that first task wasn't mm-hmm. hard enough, right? How do you engage people on your website? Now you have to engage multiple personas for the same kind of deal, same transaction.
Well, and especially depending on, as you said, what they care about, but also the content they engage with. Sure. I think the other thing that was interesting about that stat that you just talked about the 6 to 10 different decision makers, is that, you know, the research shows that each one is independently mm-hmm. making use of a half dozen pieces of content or more
yes.
as part of that process, right? And some of those, there may be some overlap, but on lots of those, there aren't. So if somebody's coming and looking at your product or coming and looking at your service, they may be looking at, you know, multiple pieces of content about the same thing, but how do you know how to show the right one to the right yeah, person exactly. based on where they are? And I think that's something that's, you know, always, always a tough thing to do. Now, you talk about this a lot, that obviously a solution that people look at when trying to solve for this problem is uh-huh. ABM, right? And account-based marketing. And account-based marketing has its a really cool tool and a really useful tool, but it's got its sure. limitations from time to time. You know, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, when you think about the journey that marketing operations or marketing managers go on to figure out what technology is now going to help them meet this expectation, you know, they often start with either technology they already have, because a lot of systems have some sort of personalization technology built in, or maybe they go buy mm-hmm. Personalization technology. And it also, it starts with, let me get this personalization technology, and where I have some personal data, I can use that to fuel the engine. And right. they run into the harsh reality that is, and we've looked at this data for our customers, you know, 3 to 5% of website visitors to B2B websites are identifiable. And that's for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's because the buying cycles are long, cookies expire, so you can't kind of re-identify the person when they return.
Right.
I think it's largely due to many folks lurk in the dark. You know, there's right. kind of a disincentive to raise your hand and identify yourself, mm-hmm. right? Because then you're going to mm-hmm. get hammered by the emails and the phone calls and everything else. Because
wait, you mean B2B salespeople?
I have been guilty of this myself, I must admit. As a matter of fact, we got a sure. lead this morning, and I specifically put in the CRM, do not contact for 4 days. Because I right. know, you know, I need this person, you know, first, this person doesn't want me to go hunt them down after 30 seconds after they hit the submit button. But also, I mean, it's not good sales process, right? They need to, you know, internalize and think about the thing that they're looking at. Sure. So we'll let them do that. Sure. But yeah, so there's that disincentive, right? You know, when do you want Steve calling you? And the reality is you want salespeople, right. you want to engage with them much later in the process after you have kind of considered it, et cetera. Not to say, though, that it's important or could be meaningful for both the company and the individual to get engaged perhaps earlier than they're comfortable with. And sure. not having the personal information on 95, 97% of your visitors, that really is where ABM came in. You know, it was this kind of reality mm-hmm. in the marketplace that there was this gap, that something's got to be done for all these people lurking in the darkness. And that's where you saw account-based marketing technologies emerge. Now, account-based marketing isn't new, right? We've been doing account-based marketing since the 50s, right? You know, for 70 years. Oh, right? Sure.
Yeah, of course, of course.
But, you know, recently there has been this gap. And these technologies, you know, what they do, of course, is they look at the data stream on the website and they try to figure out what the physical location is of the person. And if you can determine the physical location and that physical location happens to be associated with a company, you know, you connect those two dots and you say, I'm going to start, you know, sending this visitor messages about that are specific to that account, or alternatively, sure. maybe specific to the industry that person's mm-hmm. in. And so account-based marketing begins to fill, you know, that 95% hole in your knowledge about visitors. And we've found, you know, again, based upon data that our customers have shared with us, about 15 to 20% of the website visitors are addressable by ABM technologies. But that's a pre-COVID number. And they all right. said, you know, because it's location-based, you know, I'm currently sitting at my home. Mm. And so you don't know about my home in Connecticut is not associated with Solo Segment. And so it would be hard right. for me to be addressed by these technologies. And these companies saw a significant dip in the utility of that technology, although it's coming back. And it's coming back pretty fast as people, of course, move back into the office.
Sure, sure. Which we know. We know many people are going to end up back in the office. We know many people are going to end up working from home. We know many people are going to be in a hybrid scenario, yes. right? I mean, it's not, you know, I think, and I'm sure you're going to talk about this in a moment, but I think it's this situation where, you know, you can't be prepared for the either or yes. of, oh, there's going to be people who work in the office 100% of the time, or, oh, there's going to be people who work from home 100% of the time. It's going to be a bit of an and. But it doesn't fill that entire gap that you were talking about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, we kind of figure on average it's about 85% of those visitors who really are truly anonymous. And that's going to be, you know, what you've got to crack the code on is how do you engage those 85?
And that's for all of those reasons, yes. right? It's not just work from home. It's not just cookies. It's not just, you know, ad blockers or things along those lines. It's all of this added together, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned ad blockers. That's a great point. You know, we often think about like the exogenous factors within the industry or within the software industry, or within the regulatory environment as being kind of the villains in our ability to engage
right,
these
right,
people.
Right, 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 right.
But part of it, I mean, you know, all that stuff, right, is based upon, you know, kind of the desires of the humans, right? The people right. don't want their privacy trampled on, don't want their data trampled on. And so, you know, not only do you see the challenges in the regulatory and software industry, mm-hmm. but you also see what's happening, what the people are doing, right? They're using you. Ad blockers is a perfect example. You know, people are learning how to, you know, delete their cookies. Our study shows that 52% right. of people are deleting cookies every 30 days in their browsers. So I was like, whoa, you know, that used to be something nobody knew how to do. And now apparently half the people are doing it. So it's those sorts of things that, right. that are going to impact the ability to address folks.
Right. By the way, I feel bad. You know, comedy is always timing, and the timing on this is completely lost. But, you know, I will admit I missed part of that because I was looking up the word exogenous. but I get what you mean, right? Yeah. The external factors
you
bet. Are playing
you
a big
bet.
Role.
Yeah, I used the big word. I'm sorry.
I feel like we're going to have SAT questions here in a second.
They're coming exogenous up in the second half of the external. Show. Yes.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. So you know, you kind of set up the scenario where you've got, for all kinds of reasons, internal reasons, external reasons, exogenous reasons, you that, you know, people don't know. Marketers don't know who the folks are on their website. And it really poses the question of how can organizations personalize the website experience when they don't know who the person is 85% of the time?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that is the big question. And, you know, it is at its heart part of, you know, a question we pose. And it's very interesting. Several folks have mentioned this to us. It's this, you know, personalization, privacy kind of paradox, you know, can these two things, you know, mm-hmm. coexist together? And, you know, at the heart of it, you know, it's getting people to raise their hands, getting people to say, I'm ready to engage. And so there's no trick right. here, right? There's no trick. What you have to do is to present kind of the compelling case that the pain that they're feeling can be solved with the solution that you're providing. And I think the quicker and the more compelling in the more compelling way you can do that, of course, you're going to make those conversions. And one of the great challenges, especially in large enterprise companies, so if you have tens or hundreds of thousands of pieces of content, it is likely you have the right piece of content to convince every visitor.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
So it's not a content problem. Generally, it's not a content problem. The problem is it's a findability problem, right? So how do you connect this person yeah. with the right content? Now, if you have an awesome search engine, that's one way you can do it, right? They can ask the question that I am searching for this thing, please present it to me. Right. And, you know, that is a place where a lot of companies honestly do not invest a dime, right? They see search as cost. They think of search mm-hmm. as Google, and they don't understand mm-hmm. the value prop of, you know, searchers are generally your best opportunities, right? 87% right. more likely to convert, something like at least 43% more likely to buy, and sometimes much more than that. And so, mm-hmm. you know, search is the first place you can make your content more findable. Because again, I bet you have the answer on your website. Now,
right. Yeah. Of course. Of yeah. course.
So set aside search, everybody's navigating your website. You know, now the question is, how do you in real time figure out, oh, well, this, I might not know it's Tim, but based upon the content that Tim is looking at, how do I figure out what additional content might help him progress on his journey and move along? Mm-hmm. I mean, for years we've done, and that by we marketers have done, you know, related product links on websites, on pages and those sorts of things. So it is possible to do that manually, to, you know, have every content owner, you know, tag their content in a way that that allows you know, maybe some sort of related products thing to guide people along.
Sure. Sure, of course.
But the reality is people do that very poorly. There was one study that was done recently, actually not recently, it's now about 5 years old, but it shows that, you know, people who tag content disagree with themselves about 30% of the time. So not necessarily the best
right.
way.
Right. And go. That's within like a, that's like within a 2 week period. Oh, yeah. Too, yeah, right? I mean, it's not like they're tagging this content and then they're coming back to it a year right. later. It's like they're tagging the content, they're coming back to it a couple weeks later and going, I would tag it like this. And it's not the same as what they've done before.
Correct.
And that's just human nature. I mean, yeah. we're not card catalogs, correct. Right? We're not computers. It's not how we think. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
And so you know, what's left? So what's left is, well, there's a lot of data right now. And, you know, 10 years ago, it was really hard to discern what that data means, and it's getting easier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we think about how do you help people with this findability problem, that is to say, how do you help visitors on your website find the right content? What we're really thinking about is, you know, three sets of data, right? What is the intent of them? And, you know, when somebody's looking at a piece of content, they might not be able to tell you what their specific intent was, but you could kind of discern what people who look at this page is in general what their intent is, because you can look at the reasons people have come to that in the past. And, you know, some of that's done by your search engine, right? Your search engine sends people to pages, but also gives you some insight into why people are on those pages. And so, you know, we think of, if you can harvest this intent data that exists on your website, you don't need a third party for this, but if you can look at this intent data on your website, that's one thing that can clue you into, you know, the why sure. of the why they're there. And the second thing we look at, of course, is the content itself. You know, there are, you know, you don't have to rely upon the content owners to tag the content any longer, because today there are so many technologies that can essentially read, you know, especially electronic content can read it very effectively.
Sure, of course.
And,
of
you
course.
Know, you can do topical analysis on it. You can do industry analysis, a lot of different things you can imagine you could do with that content to, again, give you some sense of why are people on this website and now what are they looking at? What are they interested in? And mm-hmm. and then the final piece of the equation is actually the visits themselves of all the people over time, because, you know, for anybody who's ever looked at, you know, reports about paths through websites, there are as many paths through websites as there are people on the website, right?
Right. But,
you know, they're right. all kind of, right. you know, snowflake unique animals. But of course, there are patterns in that data. And there are right. patterns in that data, especially when you look at all your conversion moments. And for large enterprise B2B, it's primarily things like download the white paper, look at the case study, contact forms, those sorts of things. But, you know, there are patterns in the journeys that lead to that point. And if you can discern somebody's on that journey early enough, well, now you have an opportunity to influence that journey, perhaps intercept them before they abandon and move them along. Because the goal, of course, is to help people discover that content that demonstrates that you are the solution to their problem, so that instead of raising their hand in a month or 2 months or their second visit, third visit, fourth visit, fifth visit, you get them to raise their hand now and share their information so that you can put them now, move them into that bucket, which is, this is a personal person with personal information that we can now actually engage and market to.
Right. No, that's cool. That's cool. So, Steve, I'm, you know, going to set you up here to do a little commercial. How would one do that?
How would that do that, Tim? Well, some of our customers do that with, our products. All of our customers do that with our products. So, I talked about search and navigation modalities, and I talked about them because you really do have to consider both. Now, I think it's kind of most common for us as marketers to think about, you know, the navigator on the website, the person who lands on a page and how do they move along and engage with the content and get to the next thing, right? We talk about these visitor journeys and personas and those sorts of things. And that's what we're trying to do with our Guidebox product is exactly that, right? To look at the data streams, some of the data I talked about earlier, to look at those data streams. And even though we don't know anything about the person themselves, look at the behaviors. And through the understanding of those behaviors and of behaviors that lead to conversions, guide people to those positive outcomes. And by the way, it's not only positive outcomes for the company, right? It's positive outcomes for them because they have pain and they need it to be solved.
Right. One of the reasons we personalize is to actually create better experiences for customers. Right. Yes, we want to create better experiences for customers because then lots of good things happen. Like they buy from us and they tell their friends and their family and their fans and followers all about you and all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't happen if they don't have a good experience in the first place, if they don't actually accomplish what they're trying. So that makes total sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I talked about search earlier, and this is kind of the stepchild that I think a lot of folks need to focus on. We have a product called Searchbox, and, you know, it helps make search better no matter what search engine you're using, because a lot of the problems with search are not the search engine. It's not the people who are managing the search engine. It's not the content, right? It is actually feedback from customers, from users, from visitors on the website about their experience. And if you look at the data streams, both what's happening in search and what happens after search, you can gain a lot of insight into what makes search successful. And by using that data, feeding that data back into your search engine, you can automatically make search better. And I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier. I mean, searchers are more likely to do business with you because if you think about it, they've been frustrated by, they're looking on the site, they can't find something. I mean, if you go to that search bar, instead of going back to Google, that means you're a dedicated, committed individual. And so there's a lot of value in making search better. And so that's why we encourage folks, you know, if you don't need our Searchbox product, you think you can do it better on your own, absolutely go for it. Make your search engine better because there is gold in those searchers. And if they're frustrated, they're going to go away. And now your competitors get a shot at it.
Right. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you bet.
Makes perfect sense. Steve, that's great stuff. I mean, any last thoughts you want to leave folks with? I'm just looking at the time and thinking, you
know. time to wrap up. Yeah. I think that they're, you know, kind of the big thought for, you know, now that we're in season two and kind of returning to this thought of engagement, we certainly have to reflect upon, you know, what's gone on in the past year as far as the business environment, especially the digital business environment. And, you know, I'm going on my first business trip Monday, so I'll be like in Chicago for 3 days. It's going to be kind of strange.
Nice.
Yeah. But you know, we are going to be getting back to it, and we're going to be getting back on planes and seeing people and back into the office. But I do think that, you know, fundamentally, you know, digital is here to stay. I think while the Zoom calls will go down, video is going to be an important part of how we communicate. And, you know, I think websites, we all thought they were important before, but I think this notion of digital engagement is going to be increasingly important. And by the way, we see it in our numbers, right? We see, you know, the work that we're doing with our clients is increasing. So, you know, this is the big thought. It's if you were behind before and you haven't already started to accelerate your digital transformation, you know, you at least have to get ahead of your peers in the industry because I think people have religion on this and they're moving. And the laggards are no longer going to have the ability to, you know, kind of make it up with humans. I think that digital is definitely something that folks have to address.
Sounds like a perfect place to wrap up. I would like to say just another quick commercial, you know, if anybody wants to learn more about website engagement in a changed world and some of the stats that Steve has been referencing today, you know, I'd encourage you to check out Solo Segment's new report, Website Engagement in a Changed World. Look at how handy that is, which you can find at solosegment.com/website-engagement. And we'll post a link to that in the show notes. Again, that is solosegment.com/website-engagement. Steve, thank you, as always, for a great discussion. Look forward to catching up with you here on next time. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks. You too, Tim.
Search Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment focuses on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Make your search better and learn more at solosegment.com. If you liked the show, please go ahead and subscribe to us. You can find our episodes at solosegment.com/podcast or on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Podcasts, or whatever your favorite podcatcher happens to be. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/solosegment, on Twitter using the Twitter handle @solosegment, or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. With that, my name is Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week, and we'll look forward to talking with you next time on Search Chat. Take care, everybody.